Hello, and welcome to episode 35 of the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, from the JNA to the Maracanã. We ended the last decade with an episode named From the Avala to the JNA, to reflect both the very literal move of Sviana Zvezda to ground share with Partizan, but also the figurative move of the balance of power in Belgrade from Misa Pavic's charges to the babies. It therefore only seems fitting to follow the same pattern, as the title of preeminent club in Yugoslavia moves from Partizan across the first half of the 1960s to Sviana Zvezda at the end of the decade. And after a comfortable title win the prior season, Zvezda were in no mood to relinquish the title in 1968-1969, in spite of what would be one of the hardest chases in a title race Yugoslavia would see. Zvezda may have been title winners, but they were pushed every step of the way by Dinamo, with the rest nowhere, in a season where domestic football would be almost the only show in town. After Branko Zabec left Dinamo, it was left to Ivica Horvat to take over. He cleaned up the Fairs Cup final the previous season, but this would be the season where he would come closest to going all the way in the league as a manager. Instead, the wounds that had been inflicted as a player from Dinamo's capitulation in 1951 would have salt rubbed in them. Dinamo started the season like a train, destroying Celik 4-0 and Vojvodina 6-1. Even Zvezda were no match for them, albeit the autumn Zvezda could at least console themselves with a 6-1 win in the Eternal Derby. Still their biggest win over Partizan. Meanwhile, Dinamo were paranoid. At board level, they were fighting battles with the FA over refereeing. Dinamo were able to get approval for foreign referees to look after key away games. In the three pre-winter break games refereed by imports against OFK, Partizan and Maribor, Dinamo won all three to lead the league by 5 points come the break. These would be the only games refereed by imported officials. The title was theirs to throw away, especially after they defeated Zvezda at the Maracanã in March. But Dinamo instead imploded, losing to Radniki Niš, Proletar Zrenjanin and Hajduk, and also drawing against Olimpia Ljubljana. Meanwhile, Zvezda motored through to win the title by 3 points. Dinamo's paranoia and mental fragility had come to the fore in a title race once again. At the bottom, Rijeka and Proletar Zrenjanin will be relegated by a distance, with Radniki Kragujevac and Sloboda Tuzla coming up to replace them. Dinamo could at least console themselves with the cup in an epic final against Hajduk that would end up going to a replay. In the first game, the match flew from end to end, with over the 120 minutes, including extra time, a quite incredible 47 shots on target between the two sides. The result was a 3-3 draw that could have been far more, as Dinamo came from behind in the second half of extra time to secure a replay, thanks to Slaven Zambata. The second game was more clear-cut, Rudy Bellin scoring early, and while Hajduk would press and press, Zambata and Vabec would score late to make the score a 3-0 win to Dinamo that looked more comfortable than it was. European competition was far less productive than in previous seasons. While Zvezda would get beyond the first round of the European Cup, it would be courtesy of a UEFA decision to pair all Eastern European countries together, which resulted in the withdrawal of Dinamo Kiev, Poles Ruch Chorzów, Levski Sofia, Ferencváros, and Zvezda's first-round opponents, East Germany's Carl Zeiss Jena. Eventual winners Milan would skip the second round thanks to this quirk, as would Benfica. But Zvezda would simply begin their campaign in that second round against Scottish champions Celtic. Zvezda would be in the tie for 45 minutes, going in at 1-1 in Glasgow in the first leg. As legend has it, during that half-time break, Jock Steen pulled winger Jimmy Johnston aside and told him that if Celtic finished with a 3-goal lead, the winger wouldn't have to fly to Belgrade for the second leg. Having appealed to Johnston's very real fear of flying, Johnston then went on in the second half to score twice and assist twice. Zvezda managed to put some pressure on in Belgrade, getting a 1-1 draw in a game that was blighted by an interruption from fans outside the stadium. Fans waited outside to be allowed in for free at the 60-minute mark, but when the gates to the Maracanã didn't open, those fans then lobbed stones from outside into the stadium, causing fans in the ground to have to flee from the splash zone. Similar call-offs to the European Cup happened in the Cup Winners' Cup, but FK Bor didn't benefit from a bye. Instead, they were paired with the eventual winners of the trophy, Slovan Bratislava, in the first round, losing out 3-2. The Fairs Cup, not at this point being directly run by UEFA, didn't have any of these issues with walkovers, given that they did draw East versus West ties straight off the bat. And when it came to East versus West as pertaining to Yugoslavia, West was best in the first round, with Hibs defeating Olympia and Dinamo being edged out by Fiorentina. It left OFK as the only representative in the competition after a 7-4 aggregate win over Rapid Bucharest that saw the tie go from 4-all on 90 minutes to a blowout after 120 over the second leg. Come the second round, it would take a Santrach goal in each leg to put away Bologna before going out on away goals against Göztepe in the third round. Zvezda would fare better in the European Cup the following season. For a start, they'd actually win a game against a side from a distinctly different persuasion to Celtic, thrashing Linfield 12-2 in the first round, with an 8-0 win at the Maracanã in the first leg, and Zota Antonievich scoring 4 in Belfast. But they would still depart at the second round, this time getting to face the East German side in Vorwärts Berlin, dropping out on away goals after the tie finished 4-all on aggregate. Dinamo's participation in the Cup Winners' Cup would start just as Bor's did the season prior, taking on Slovan Bratislava. But the reigning champions wouldn't even land a blow on Dinamo, as Mijković started the scoring in only 2 minutes, as Dinamo went through 3-0. The second round sent Dinamo to France to take on Marseille. After getting an away goal in the first leg, Marian Novak would score a double at the Maximir to take Dinamo to the quarters and to face Schalke, who would manage to take Dinamo out 4-1 on aggregate after defeating them 3-1 in Zagreb. It would be Dinamo's last European game in the spring until 2019. In the Fairs Cup, Yugoslav sides didn't make it past the first round. Partizan were defeated 3-2 by Oypest, NK Zagreb 5-2 by Charleroi, and Vojvodina 2-1 by Gvardia Varshava. This had real consequences. The following season was the final year of the Fairs Cup ahead of the UEFA Cup beginning the season after, and performance was taken into account to allow places to be distributed to nations that hadn't been part of the Fairs Cup. Yugoslavia's performances, as they were, ended with one of their Fairs Cup places being traded to Albania, along with Greece ceding a place to Cyprus, and the place reserved for the winners being given to the USSR. This wouldn't be an immediate issue for Yugoslavia, as Albanian clubs would withdraw for a couple of years, and Yugoslavia would get their place back, while Albania did that, but representation in the UEFA Cup was about to drop. The second ramification of the coming move from the Fairs Cup to the UEFA Cup was that it essentially did away with much of the point of the Balkans Cup. Save for Yugoslavia, who had always been early adopters of European competition, all the nations in the region had comparatively low access to the Fairs Cup. As we mentioned in episode 32, the Balkans Cup at this time, in the midst of having a pair of seasons on the spin, which would essentially kill its popularity all by itself, but even without that happening, the opening up of the UEFA Cup to more clubs would have seriously harmed it. However, given that it actually carries on in the background until 1994, it's time to swiftly put it to bed for good when it comes to our timeline. The two groups of three teams format it had at this point would carry on for the entire 1970s, with group winners moving on to the final, and it would produce four Yugoslav winners in that time. Firstly, in 1975, Radnički Niš defeating Eskişehirspor in the final, and I apologise to any people from Turkey listening about that pronunciation. They will be followed the next season by Dinamo, who had Zlatko Kranjčar and Snezko Schelin to thank for their final win over Romania's Sportul Studentesc. 2 years later, and it will be Rijeka winning the cup, thanks to a 4-1 win at Cantrida with doubles from Edmond Tomic and Damir Desnica, before they would lose the final the following year. The final Yugoslav winners would be in the 1981 edition, and Velez Mostar won in one of the wildest ties ever against Trakia Plovdiv, in which Velez would win 12-7 over the two legs, with Dusan Bajevic contributing 5. At this point, the whole competition went swiftly downhill. Sloboda Tuzla withdrew the following season, which eventually lasted 2 seasons without a Yugoslav side in it, and in the following 83-84 edition, the tournament would have to be run as one group of 3, as Albania, Greece and Yugoslavia all withdrew. Yugoslav sides wouldn't take part again until the 88-89 edition, while the following edition would be cancelled due to the Romanian Revolution. Budućnost would be Yugoslavia's last entrance in the competition in 1990-1991, losing the final to Inter Sibiu before other matters would preclude Yugoslav participation. The final edition would be in the 93-94 season and won by Samsunspor, as it eventually became something people just weren't interested in, as it became a competition that only included newly promoted sides. The Balkans Cup was ultimately a good idea, hamstrung by the dual hits of a loss of legitimacy through farcical additions, and the creation of a UEFA Cup, both coming at more or less the same time as each other, ending at the point where the Balkans exploded into conflict. But when it comes to our timeline, the Balkans Cup has already ended. Domestic matters in the 1969-70 season became muddied by fixing allegations, this time from FK Sarajevo goalkeeper Refik Mustić. Before an away game against Olympia, he was contacted and offered 2,000 dinar to throw the game. He reported this to police and to his club, and on their advice, took the money and changed the fixing operation into a sting. Mustić didn't throw the game, and Sarajevo won 4-1, albeit Mustić did have to leave the game injured after a collision with an opposition player. After the game, Olympia board member Anton Frenetic was arrested, but the affair itself was kept relatively quiet due to it being fairly early in the season and it having been thwarted. This would be the last major player attempt at fixing for some time. Fixing moved to getting at referees, and for much of the 1970s, it was fair to assume that the majority of officials were on the take. This was to the extent that in 1974, the nation's senior referee had to be suspended due to being caught openly taking money so as to fix some of that summer's World Cup games. In spite of all this, Olympia at this point were in the midst of their most notable season to date. While they would only escape relegation by a point, they took Sfenas Fiesta all the way in the cup final, with Fiesta only getting the win in the 118th minute through Zajec. For the first time in our timeline, Olympia give us an example of a Slovenian club with actual recognisable stars. Both Branko Oblak and Danilo Popivoda were in their 5th seasons at the club and beginning to move from potential to their prime. Zaza Besiktas had joined from Partizan in 1967 for 65 million dinar, a transfer that brought in an internal transfer cap of 12.5 million dinar after it due to its largesse. Entering 1970 with a promotion from the second tier would be Borac Banja Luka and FK Sivenka, who would replace NK Zagreb, who were bottom of the first league by a distance, and the by now traditional yo-yo club, Vardar. The league at the sharp end divided into a top four that were a little distance ahead of the rest. Dinamo and Hajduk would be 6th and 7th respectively, as while two of the top four was Zvezda and Partizan, the others were Velez Mostar and Zelyesnikov, something that would be a harbinger of what was to come at the start of the 70s. So, to end the 1960s for us domestically, Sviesta played a notable friendly against none other than Pelé Santos in late 1969. And while football's greatest fighter of erectile dysfunction got his name on the score sheet, it was only once, as his show was well and truly stolen by a Vojin Lazarevic hat-trick. And while 3 points would separate the top four in the league, it would be wrong to suggest that Zvezda were anything other than comfortable league winners, able to take their foot off the pedal without a win in the last four games. Zvezda had beaten them twice, and over the road from the Maracanã at the JNA, Partizan came in as runners-up, but also came out of the season with the first mention of what would become their most notable supporters group, the Grabari. While organised fan groups at other clubs outside of Hajduk did exist, the next time we talk about a major recognisable group that is with us today will be as we hit the late 1980s and the foundation of the Delir and the Bad Blue Boys. The 1960s had begun with a Partizan treble and ended with a Zvezda one. In between, there had been shocks. And for an entire decade, Hajduk had almost never been competitive and was scarcely a member of the Big Four anymore. The 1970s was about to turn that all on its head. Next time on the History of Yugoslav Football podcast, we hurtle into the 70s as perhaps the most unexpected lead wingers come from nowhere to depose Zvezda. Thank you very much for listening. If you are listening on your favourite podcast service, please do leave a review. They are very much appreciated and do help to get this podcast out to more and more people. Sharing is caring as well on social media. But yes, we will catch you in the 1970s next time.